Last week, we studied the first parak of Hallel, chapter 113 in Tehillim, and I gave a quick introduction to Tehillim. I'm going to add to that introduction a little bit today, and we're going to look at the second parak of Hallel, which is very likely the key parak in the whole section of 113 through 118 that we refer to as Hallel, as we call it Hallel Mitzrayim. This is the only parak that refers overtly to Yetziat Mitzrayim, if it does, and that's something we're going to have to discuss. But it's a well-known parak. Again, a question that I touched on last week that we always have to think about when studying Tehillim is who wrote the parak. Now, who wrote the parak doesn't necessarily mean you can get a guy with a social security number, but you could question, like, at what time period or from what vantage point was the parak written? We have numerous prakim that, for instance, reflect on something around the destruction of the Mikdash, the destruction of Yerushalayim, like Ayin Tet, and of course Kuf Lamed Zayin, famously. Some that seem to be reflecting on a prosperous, robust city of Yerushalayim, like Kuf Chaf Bet and others. The question is this something that's written at the time of Yetziat Mitzrayim? Is it written as a historic reflection? It's very unclear. But again, we face the problem we face often with these sort of texts is the more well-known a text is, the harder it is to teach. Because we know it so well, we don't realize how well we don't know it. And this one, when you see it immediately, I don't know about you, but all tunes spring to mind and memories of a Seder spring to mind and memories of dancing and with the high school boys during Hallel. You know, it's like it's got all sorts of great associations. That it's hard to look at it as a text to analyze, but so we got to do. So we'll spring right into it. But Beit Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, Beit Yaakov mi Am Lo'ez. I'm first going to do what we need to do with any parak of Tehillim, and just quickly, schematically, anytime that we study Tehillim, we have to ask three questions, and in cases like this, a fourth question. The three questions you got to ask are, the three goals you have are, first of all, what do the words mean, right? Second of all, what's the structure of the psalm? And because it's poetry, it's got a structure to it, a poetic structure. Three is, what is the message of the psalm? What's the point? What's it trying to get across? Is it thanksgiving? Is it requesting? Is it amazement? Is it dismay? What might it be? Worry, anxiety? And fourth, in the case of many psalms, you have to ask, what is its place in the liturgy? So if you're studying, for instance, Perek Dalet of Tehillim, you don't have to ask that question. It's not used in our liturgy. If you ask Perek Vav, you might also ask, why is it used by Ashkenazim for Tachanun, as an example? So here, besides the three main questions you have to ask anytime, you also have to wonder, what is this doing? And the reality is it should be pretty obvious what this is doing as a part of Hallel. But there may be something underneath the text that gives it even more meaning and relevance to Hallel than that. Okay, so we'll take a look at the text. Our first job is to go through it and translate the words. And of course, we all know the words because we know about Beit Yisrael. Let's just see. And along with reading the words, we're going to also notice some nuances about the words that are kind of odd. But Beit Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, Beit Yaakov mi Am Lo'ez. Right? So we'll translate that. When Yisrael left Mitzrayim, Beit Yaakov, the house of Yaakov, from an Am Lo'ez. Right now, we're going to translate that as a nation that speaks a foreign tongue, Am Lo'ez. Perhaps that's what it means. You notice that this opening of a parak is very odd. First of all, Betzeit Yisrael Mitzrayim, which is a clause that means that when this happened. So we're not given any introduction to what it is that's happening or why it's happening or who's involved. It happened. It's Beit Yisrael Mitzrayim. Beit Yaakov Mi'am Lo'ez. It's an odd opening. What's a much odder opening about it is, who is missing from this first pasuk? Think about the introduction to Aseret HaDibrot. Anochi Adonai Elohechem, Elohecha Asher Hoceiticha Me'eretz Yisrael, Beit Avadim. Yetziat Mitzrayim is the biggest point to HaKadosh Baruch Hu text, and here it's Betzeit Yisrael Mitzrayim, Beit Yaakov Me'am Lo'ez, Ke'ilu B'chufshai Yatzu. They got their visa and they left. Right? First of all, no miracle. Second of all, no Yad Hashem. But Israel left Mitzrayim. So we have to keep that in mind as we move ahead in the parak. Second thing to look at here is just, it's not a question, but it's something about the nature of biblical poetry. We talked about it a little bit last week. Here it comes really full force. This parak is a great parak to teach Shira Mikrait. And you look at, I broke up the lines that way so you could see, this parak has perfect parallelism, tikbolet, and a great way to teach it. All right, what is the parallel to Yisrael in the second half of the pasuk?
Yaakov.
Okay, it's actually Beit Yaakov.
Right.
Parallel to Yisrael is Beit Yaakov. What's the parallel to Mitzrayim in the second half?
Amloes.
So what's missing in the second half of the pasuk that's not paralleled?
It's eight.
And this is something that we refer to as gapping, in this case, forward gapping in song, in poetry, which is when you have a word in one half that's not represented in the other, it's carried over. We have countless examples of this, like Tov Lahodot Nadonai Ulazamer L'Shimcha Elyon. The word Tov is left out of the second half because we understand it's Tov Lahodot L'Shimcha Elyon. And again, you look through Tehillim, you'll see it happens quite frequently. And so it's B'tzeit Yisrael Mitzrayim, B'tzeit Beit Yaakov Miyam Loez. Now, why doesn't it say that? Because what's the most important consideration in Shira Mikrait? It's not rhyming, which in English is usually the chief consideration. What's the consideration? It is meter. And in normal poetry, not in Kina poetry, but in normal poetry, we want to maintain the meter. So, B'tzeit Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, Beit Yaakov me'am lo'ez. And therefore, to add B'tzeit in there would disrupt the meter. And Yaakov is never presented alone, not usually presented alone as Am Yisrael, but rather Beit Yaakov. And we'll see there's another reason why the author uses Beit Yaakov here. All right, so we understand the structure of this pasuk, and we understand the relationship of the first and second half to each other. Again, we have the bigger problems, which is, where's HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the picture? Also, why is Mitzrayim being described as an Am Lo'ez? That's an unusual and really unprecedented reference to Mitzrayim. I continue. Hayta Yehuda L'Kodsho Yisrael Mamshelotav. So at that point, Yehuda became his holy one, and Yisrael, again, Yehuda and Yisrael has parallels, sort of. Mam Shalotav means his rulers. Right? So what this seems to be describing is that when Bnei Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim, they suddenly attained this special status. Now, by the way, Likud Sho is his holy ones. Whose holy ones? His rulers. Who's rulers? Clearly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But notice, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hiding behind this psalm. There's a reference to him, but he's not mentioned at all. Right? So it's odd. It gets odder as we move on.
How are you defining that phrase, though? How you tell you Yehuda L'Kodesh?
Yehuda became his holy one, his Kodesh.
Became.
Okay. Right. And then Yisrael became, again, Hayta is gapped, became his rulers.
Uh-huh.
Again, whose rulers, whose holy one? HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Right.
Why isn't he mentioned?
Right.
And then, Hayam Ra'av Vayanos. So there's several things that have happened when Am Yisrael left Mitzrayim. One is their status changed. The other is Hayam Ra'av Vayanos, which means the sea saw, we have to have fun with that, and fled. Now, which sea are we talking about?
The Yam Suf.
We assume we're talking about Yam Suf, but is that an accurate portrayal of what happened based on the text? Hayam Ra'av Vayanos? It makes it sound like the sea on its own fled, whereas the whole point of Kriyat Yam Suf is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvodo v'atzmo made it go.
Right.
And now, Hayarden Yisov Le'achor. How did the Yarden get into the story? That's 40 years later. And by the way, what did the Yarden do? Yisov Le'achor means it turned backwards. It reversed direction. That's, by the way, not accurate to what it says in Sefer Yoshua Gimel, where the Yam just stopped, the Yarden stopped up at Adam and started building a wall. It didn't move backwards, it just stopped and built it kind of a dam of water. But again, the critical thing is that what's happening here, Hayam Ra'avayanos, the sea, even if you want to say this is an accurate description of what happened in Yam Suf, it's giving Yam Suf all the credit and the Yarden all the credit, which is that's not what happened. And we continue on. Heharim rakedu cheilim, givaot kivnetzon. So mountains danced like rams, and hills danced like little sheep. What's that talking about is a little unclear, and we'll get to it. But the first of these descriptions, which is Hayam and Hayarden, is something that we have in our text, but different. Different cause and different manifestation, but we know about the sea and the Yarden splitting. We don't know anything about Harim, Raktu, Chayim. We don't know what that is. What's that referencing? And things continue to get strange. Ma lecha Hayam kitanus, which means we've gone from an eyewitness describing some strange natural phenomena to an involved, curious, perhaps concerned onlooker who turns to them and asks, Malacha Yam Kitanus, Hayarden Tisov Leachor. And by the way, why the sea? Why are you fleeing? And why the Yarden? Why are you turning back? And again, we're gapped. It's Malacha Yam Kitanus, Umalacha Hayarden Kitisov Leachor. There's a lot of words that are missing that are assumed to be there. And he continues, Heharim Tikdu Chayilim. And again, this is part of the question. So, Malachem Heharim Ki Tirkadu Chayilim. Why mountains? Why are you dancing like rams? And Givaot Ki Netzon, why are you hillocks dancing like little sheep? And
why the repetition?
What?
Why the repetition again?
It's not a repetition. If you look at these lines, Heharim Akdu Chayilim, and the next, that pasuk in the next, it's describing something happening. And it's continuing from the pasuk before. So if you have pasuk, which is pasuk gimel, Hayam Ra'avayano Sedin Osov Lachor, Harim Akdu Chayilim Kivav Kivnetzon, describe phenomena that have to do with seas and mountains. And the next two pasukim, Malachayam Tanus and Harim Akdu Kedu Chayilim, is a conversation between the Mishorer, the author, and these things that are acting strange, saying, why are you acting strange? Uh-huh. And then they give an answer. So the seas speak, the Jordan speaks, the mountains and the hills all speak. And what's their answer? And of course, this is poetry. So in poetry, animals can talk and the sun can talk and the heavens can talk and we can talk to the heavens and we can stand in Yerushalayim and talk to the king of Ashur and he's listening. This is poetry. Milifne Adon Chuli Aretz. So their answer is from the presence of the master, who Chuli Aretz would seem to mean the one who shakes the earth, Mecholel. We're going to see something else as we move along. Milifne Eloa Yaakov, right? From the God of Yaakov, but the presence of the God of Yaakov. In other words, we ran away because of this presence. And Hahofchi, and this takes us back to last week. If you remember, I mentioned that in poetry, you often have an enclitic yod, which is a yod at the end of a word, which is not really part of the word, but it is poetic, like mekimim me'afradal, lo shivim divim, haofchi hatsur agam mayim, which is haofech. He's the one who changes a rock into a lagoon. Chalamish l'mayno mayim. L'mayno, the yod, vav, is also in clitic. It's mayan. He changes a flint stone into a spring. And that's the whole parak. So we know the words. The structure actually is fairly straightforward. The message is really confusing. Very hard to figure out. Again, we won't have much of a problem figuring out what it's doing in Hallel, but we got to figure out the message. So I think it's pretty easy to see the structure of the psalm. And it's very, very schematically easy to see. Is you have eight psukim in which each two psukim form a stanza. And the first stanza, we'll take a look at it back here on the first page. The first stanza is describing what happened, meaning describing the historic event. Am Yisrael left Mitzrayim, and they became close to God. They became adopted by God, as it were. And then we have two psukim that describe crazy natural phenomena, the sea and Jordan and the mountains and the hills. And then in the third stanza, we have a conversation between the onlooker and the sea and the Jordan and the mountains and the hills. And then the fourth is the answer. Okay, the structure is easy to see. Well, what the heck is going on? So there's an interesting story behind Parshanut on this Midrash, which really has benefited many of us in different ways, directly and indirectly. You've all heard of Aliyat HaNor. You're wondering how Aliyat HaNor gets into this year, but you've all heard of Aliyat HaNor, I assume, and we had his old, which was something that was started in the 30s in Israel, which was really an attempt to get Jews to leave Europe because of a sense by the Jews in Eretz Israel of what was coming in Europe. And the Jews in Europe, for the most part, didn't want to leave, specifically the Jews in Germany. So the Aliyat HaNor was an attempt to at least save the remnant. And the guise was, we're going to have a bunch of young people come to Eretz Yisrael and to build the land and to be educated in the land. And the idea was, of course, then they'll be here and they'll be saved. And tens of thousands of young people were saved from the Shoah as a result. And very quickly, overnight, in the early 30s, there were all sorts of little youth villages called Kriyat Noar, Kriyat HaNoar, that were built for the purpose of absorbing them and setting up schools. And at the same time, there was a need to get teachers. And so the Hebrew University was one of the sources of finding teachers. And they had a young instructor in literature by the name of Aryeh or Ludwig Strauss, who was a young German Jew who was part of a nascent tshuva movement in Germany. And he'd made Aliyah, and he was teaching, and he'd been trained in Germany, and he was a professor of literature, and that's what he was doing, teaching secular literature. And he was drafted, I believe it's actually Nechama Zal who drafted him, to come and teach teachers for the Aliyat HaNor. But they needed someone who could teach Tanakh. And he said, what do I know about Tanakh? It doesn't matter, you know literature, Tanakh's literature, so teach Tanakh. And he did. And he, well, the first thing that he produced in this area was a small booklet called Al Shlosha Pirkei Tehillim. He analyzed Tehillim using tools of literature. And that actually started the ball rolling for a whole approach to poetry in Tanakh, which was grounded in kind of general approach to literary study of literature. And of course, enhanced because it's Kodesh. And of the three prakim that he wrote of, one of them was this, B'tzeit Yisrael Mimitzrayim. And he points out several things about the perek that we've already noticed that are kind of odd. And he says, if you think about the perek seems to be based on the beginning of perek Yod Tet in Shmot. And here it is. You notice that we have B'tzeit Yisrael Mimitzrayim, which of course evokes for us B'chodesh HaShlishi, L'tzeit B'nei Yisrael Mimitzrayim, Eretz Yisrayim, which is Ma'amad Har Sinai. And there we have, remember, B'tzeit Yisrael Mitzrayim, Beit Yaakov Mi'am Lo'ez, and that's Dafka, the place where we're called Beit Yaakov, Kotamar Levet Yaakov. Sarah Schneider got her name from this. Beit Yaakov comes from here, Beit Yaakov. And now, Me'am Lo'ez. What's Me'am Lo'ez? So in that same description, God says, "Atem ra'item asher asiti leMitzrayim, va'asa etchem al kanfei nisharim. I lifted you on wings of eagles, va'avi etchem elai." Okay, and now when we get to kanfei nisharim, please take a look at this related pasuk in the Tochacha. Yisa Adonai lecha goy merachog mitzaretz kasher yideh hanasher. This is in the curse. God is going to bring a nation from a distance, from the end of the world, just like an eagle flies. Perhaps here it's a vulture. Goy asher lo tishma l'shono. And how's he marked? A nation whose language you won't understand. And so you put all that together, and Mitzrayim becomes an Am Lo'ez. That the marked feature of our relationship with Egypt is that we didn't understand the language, and we didn't know them. Now, Haita Yehuda leKodesho, Yisrael Mamshelotav. Now, leKodesho and Mamshelotav are not the same thing. One of them is a measure of sanctity, and the other is a measure of political rule. what was stated at that point, Vatem tiyuli mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh. Look at that. You're going to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. So you have both mamshelotav and kodsho right here. And so Strauss points out that the wording of our perek seems to be building on the story of the arrival at Har Sinai. Right? Now, it still begs the question, what's going on in this perek? Meaning, where's God in this perek? So he has a beautiful take on it, in which he makes the following claim, and I'll show you because I kind of mapped out his approach here. He says, we start but say Yisrael and Mitzrayim, and you notice that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not mentioned at all, not even as a reference, that Am Yisrael leaves Mitzrayim. And then in the second Pasuk, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hinted to. Haytayu da'ala kodsho, Yisrael mam shalotav. But that then moves to the following thing. What happens when God's presence is felt? Suddenly, the sea and the Yarden flee, and the mountains start jumping around. Now, just parenthetically about mountains jumping around like animals. Evidently, and I've never seen this, but when animals are outside in a storm, they dance like breakdancers. They just dance frantically. They're kind of lost their free will and their bodies sort of spasmodically move. And the description here is that the hills and the mountains move like that. Now, what scene in Torah does that remind you of?
I'm on Har Sinai,
exactly. And that's, of course, where this whole thing starts. B'chodesh HaShlishi, let's say Bnei Yisrael Me'aretz Yitzrayim, which means Strauss's take is that this is a poetic description of Mamad Har Sinai. Am Yisrael gets out, they get there, they become, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like, right now, kind of hiding. And what happens as a result? The sea, river, everything's fleeing. Now, of course, we have the problem here is that the Yarden, why is the Yarden part of this? And then we have this conversation back, but notice what happens, and this is, he says, is so brilliant, is the literary strategy of this is to become more and more compact, meaning fewer words saying more things. So notice, and I put them in small print, Malacha Yam Kitanus, and then Hayarden Tisov Leachor is really Malacha Yarden Kitisov Leachor. You have three words in the Pasuk that represent six words. And now, Malachem Harim Ki Gedung Chaylim, again, three words that represent six words. And here it gets even more fun. Malachem Agvaot Ki Tikaduk Yivnei Tzon, you got three words that represent seven words. In other words, the text is compact, meaning it's holding way more in it than is readily apparent. Okay? And that brings us to God now coming out of the shell. What's the answer of the mountains and everything? Why are they freaking out? Because Milifnei Adon Chuli Aretz. And now Chuli Aretz may not mean the one who shakes the earth, but rather the one who gives birth to the earth, as in Mecholel Ayalot, right? To give birth. Milifnei Eloha Yaakov. Here he is, the God of Yaakov. And what is God's big claim to fame here in this whole story? Haofchi Hatsur Agam Mayim. He turns the rock into a lagoon. By the way, where did that happen? That happened at Har Sinai. What? Go ahead.
No, it's fine.
No, that happened at Har Sinai when Moshe took the stick. Mm-hmm. Remember, just before the Amalek story, right? And he goes up to the mountain, and then the water comes out. He hits the rock. Chalamish the Mayim, a small stone becomes a spring. So this is now talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu changing nature. The question is this the story of Moshe, or is this something else going on? Because the interesting thing is that now HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being explicitly presented, and not only that, even hinted to as Hatzur, but the Tzur, of course, is primarily the rock, is being brought out openly. And now it takes us back to the beginning of the Perek. The end takes us back because who took Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim? You only discovered at the end of the parak, and suddenly you look back and say, aha, but Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim is Bohotzi Hashem Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim. Bohotzi Hashem Bnei Yaakov Me'am Lo'ez. HaKadosh Baruch Hu lakach et Yehuda lekodesho ve'asa miYisrael et mamshelotav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is active, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, because what's happening is this parak is using compaction and putting many great things into small, again, by a lot of words into a few words, to represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence there as manifest and making all this happen, but compact. One way of looking at this parak. Meir Weiss, Olav Shalom, was a professor of Tanakh at Bar Ilan for, I think it's actually at Hebrew U, for a long time, from Yid, Hungarian Jew, wrote some very important books on studying Tanakh. And he wrote also on this, and he mentioned Strauss's approach, but he had something else to add to it. He didn't really detract, but he had something else to add to it. So if you take a look at it, we mentioned already that there are several problems in this parak because they don't seem to be talking about events that we read about in the context of Yitziat Mitzrayim. The mountains dancing sounds like a really poetic way to talk about Har Sinai, but the narrative of Har Sinai never actually mentions that. It mentions smoke and fire and lightning, but the mountains don't move at all. And the Yarden, of course, is not a part of that story at all. And beyond that, something we asked at the very beginning is the sea doesn't flee and the Yarden doesn't turn back. God makes the sea split and God makes the Yarden stop, which led Weiss to suggest that this parak is actually not talking about Yitziat Mitzrayim per se, but about something much grander. And I get grander than Yitziat Mitzrayim, but what I mean by that is, but rather it's describing the manifestation of God's presence in the world, or God becoming manifest in the world and the way that creation responds to it. I'll show you a key pasuk elsewhere in Tehillim that will help us. Right here in Tehillim Ayin Zayin. Ga'alta bizroa amecha, you redeemed your nation with your strong arm. B'nei Yaakov v'Yosef Sela, again, Beit Yaakov. Ra'ucha mayim Elohim, the water saw you, God. Ra'ucha mayim yachilu, the water saw you and they shook off your gezutomot, and the chasm started shaking. Meaning, when God is present in the world, and this is something you see at the beginning of Shirat Devorah, and you see it at the beginning of Zot HaBracha, whenever God's presence is felt in the world just crumbles. Everything shakes. And so Weiss suggests that this parak uses Yitziat Mitzrayim as a model, but it's really more about what happens when God's presence is manifest. And now we'll read it through a last time and get an appreciation for one of the many ways we could see this parak. When Am Yisrael came out and became wedded to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, became connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, became the representatives of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world, what was the reaction of the world, of the physical earth, to this revelation of God? The answer is the world can't take it without freaking out. Hayam ra'av ayanos. What happens when God appears? The sea turns backwards. By the way, the sea turns backwards means the sea goes against its nature. Because the sea flows in one direction, it goes against its nature. And more to the point, Hayarden yisov le'achor. The Yarden flows uphill. By the way, does that remind you of a famous story in Chazal? Reb Eliezer and Tana Rosh Halach Noi? The sea flows uphill. The river flows uphill. Ha'arim rakdu chelim. Why the mountains? Because think about it. What are mountains? Mountains are the most stable thing we have. Says, even when the mountains fall, my love will never fall. Why do these pick the mountains? Because the mountains never fall. They never crumble. The most stable thing, and what happens when God comes? They start dancing like crazy animals. And so we turn to the sea and say, why are you freaking out? Why are you turning backwards? Mountains, why are you dancing? Why are you going so against your nature? And the answer is because when God's presence is felt in the world, all of nature becomes subjugated to that, but all of nature has an ecstatic reaction, were even the non-sentient, the rocks of a mountain. And even when the animals sense this, they are ecstatic and they lose control. And so what we're now stating is that B'tzeit Yisrael Mimitzrayim, Am Yisrael coming out of Mitzrayim, should not be understood merely as a geographic move, as a political move, or even just as a religious re-identification, as Semi became Am Hashem. This was a revelation of God on earth, and all of earth just lost its ability to control itself, lost its sense of place and of parameter, and ecstatically enthused at the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, we take a look at that within the context of Hallel. Remember, the first parak of Hallel was everybody should give praise to God at all times and all places. God is way above. God is transcendent. And God yet God is immanent. Remember, we ended with God is immanent. Lo shivi im nedivim neve amo. Mo shivi akarat habayit en asmecha. Hallelujah. And then we get to the core parak of the whole Hallel, which is why we paskin like Beit Hillel and we include it in Magid, which is we describe that this event that we're re-experiencing a week from tonight, imagine that, that we're re-experiencing and that we're reliving and that we're yearning to be part of, is an experience in which all of creation loses its boundaries and loses its sense of place because it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu becoming manifest in this world. And we, us little Am Yisrael, we are the focal point of that entire thing. It all starts B'tzeit Yisrael Mitzrayim, Beit Yaakov Miyam Loez. And that gives us a sense of two opposite feelings which go hand in hand, which Hallel is designed to internalize for us. One is the majesty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Another is the very limited finitude of Am Yisrael, of us. We're individuals. Not of Am Yisrael, but us as individuals. We're just regular humans. We're not capable of more than that. And yet we are the ones who were selected by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when he acted to bring us out, then that great manifestation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world shook all of creation up. And that certainly should be an inspiring point to then say Birchat HaGeula b'fe male u'belev male simcha, as we thank God, al gu'ulatenu v'al pedut nafshenu.